And this is KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's 8:06 on this Thursday, September 19th. And currently we've got 43 degrees here in both Park City and Heber City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Sandra Keynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Yes, it is another kind of chilly start to the day, so make sure you grab the hoodies, sweatshirts, and light jackets as you head out the door. But hey, we've got that sunshine, and that should make for a pretty nice afternoon. We'll call it partly sunny. There is a chance that we'll see a couple of those high clouds streaming in from the west again later on today. So at times you may see a couple of fair weather clouds. But that's what they mean, fair weather. So we'll call it partly sunny out there for your day, and temperatures remaining very, very nice out there, very fall-like out there with highs only in the low 70s, maybe around 70, 71 in Park City. The Heber Valley, we're talking mid-70s for highs, so below average and feeling nice. Just a beautiful day. Maybe if you want to go for a drive, we're starting to see just a little bit of some of those leaves starting to change some colors there. So not a bad day, definitely, to get out there and explore a little bit around to see that. We're going to stay pretty much on the dry side for today, so rain chances around 0%. Should be a pretty nice day. Now, so going to tonight. Yeah, you guessed it. With those clear skies, we're going to see another chilly night. So heading back down into the 30s to right around 40 for both Park City and in the Heber Valley. Now, you will notice a few more clouds on your Friday afternoon in both Park City and the Heber Valley, and there will be a chance that we introduce a few isolated storms. Now, the best chance of rain is going to be across southern Utah as we go throughout your Friday afternoon, but there will be a chance in the late afternoon hours that we could see an isolated storm or two pop up along the Wasatch back. So we'll keep that chance in there. We'll call it about a 20 to 30% chance. So I wouldn't cancel your outdoor plans. I would not worry too much about a Friday afternoon rainstorm, but there could be an isolated shower or two then. Otherwise, as we go into the weekend, that low pressure system moves away from the area, but it's just going to leave more of the same weather we've been dealing with. So yes, you guessed it, more sunshine returning across the area and chilly temperatures, especially in the morning. We'll be talking about lows back down into the 30s to right around 40 degrees in both Park City and the Heber Valley, with afternoon high temperatures only in the upper 60s to right around the low 70s in both Park City and the Heber Valley. So a chilly weekend, I guess we'll call it a cool weekend, not a chilly weekend, but definitely a very fall-like one with lots of sunshine. And then heading into next week, we're looking at partly cloudy skies. We will start to see a warming trend, but it's not going to be extreme. We'll see those highs instead of in Park City being around the upper 60s to 70, we'll get those back into the mid 70s by the middle of next week. And in the Heber Valley, we'll be talking about highs back into the upper 70s, close to 80 by the middle of next week. But still, we're going to be focused on sunshine. So, wow, we've got just a nice stretch of weather. The only little hiccup, though, Leslie, Friday afternoon, maybe an isolated shower possible, but I wouldn't be too worried about it.
Okay. Thank you, Cedric.
No problem.
And on the phone with us with our trails report, Laura Anthony with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy Thursday, Park City. Looks like we've got some news on the helicopters that will be flying around the canyon side of the Park City Mountain tomorrow. There will be trail stops, so they'll have guards in place to ensure that trail users can cross the area safely, but you may have to wait if you get over into that neck of the woods, so just be aware of that. Also respect the closures if there are any. Those are for your safety. Looks like the work is related to the Sunrise Gondola, and that's planned to be open winter 25-26, so that's kind of exciting. We've also got a reroute, just a heads up to those of you who like Red Bull. We did reroute a section of that trail just above Jenny's. We made that crossing kind of a little bit better line of sight, and we're going to be sanctioning that trail, so we have to safety it up. And that's a little bit different than it has been. So if you're a Red Bull fan, just be sure that you're paying attention as you come into the Jenny's area. Looks like Chris from Basin Rec is saying nothing new to report in the Basin Trails. And Corey from South Summit Trails Foundation is reporting that everything in South Summit's good to go. Wasatch Trails Foundation looks like they're going to build a downhill trail off of Maple Grove in Springer Hollow. They got the go-ahead for that, and they need some help. So If you're interested in a dig day, maybe you've got a high school team or just a group of folks who want to get out and get this new trail online, you can reach out to info@WasatchTrailsFoundation.org. That'll be a fully hand-dug trail, so it sounds like a hoot. Yeah, sounds like we are rolling forward through this fall and hoping for maybe a little moisture in the trails. That wouldn't hurt at this point. So fingers crossed, and we'll see you out there.
Okay. Hey, got to ask you, though, the new trail that we had been talking about, I think you've titled it Heard It Both Ways. Is this a Wasatch Trail Foundation trail up there in the conservation, the 45th conservation area?
Yep, that is. And we're also working on the WOW Trail, the connection between the WOW Trail and then the Bonanza Flat Trail system. So the Bonanza Loop will have a connection into the WOW Trail in the coming seasons. It won't be done this year. But yes, as far as the 45th Conservation, that's there's a whole trail system going in over there. So to be reported.
Yeah, and I guess you haven't been up there in a while, but I'd ridden it about 3 weeks ago and then back up last week, and it's like just a section of it now totally obliterated by construction. So we open a trail and then destroy it?
That is totally the landowner's prerogative, right? They did build a trail through there, and yes, news is that they've gone and graded through that, but anything that they're building out there is it'll come back, but we just have to keep in mind that, you know, they're not compelled to do the trails. They're doing this for the benefit of the community, also for the benefit of their visitors, if we're being real honest there. But
I don't know. I would just look at a timeline and say, oh, look, we need to build this. Let's wait on the trail. I don't know. It just seems like, why would you go to the trouble of building a trail only to, you know, kind of wreck a section of it. So it
right.
will get...
One can only... It'll come back, yeah, and one can only speculate. You know, I don't think that developments are as straightforward as we might think from the trails perspective, but they'll be putting the trails back in.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Laura.
All right, yeah. Have a good one, Leslie. Bye.
Laura Anthony is the Executive Director of Mountain Trails Foundation. You're listening to KPCW. Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be talking with Summit County Council Member Melina Stevens. Later on, Park City School Board Vice President and Interim Superintendent Caleb Fine and Wendy Crossland joining us, and Joel Zarrow and Minda Boland from Park City Community Foundation announcing the annual grants that were handed out at their grants celebration. First on the phone, with a recap from yesterday's Summit County Council meeting, I have Council Chair Melina Stevens. Good morning, Melina.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can. I'm sorry. It was...
Perfect.
There we go. Let's see. The bulk of the meeting seemed to be spent on the potential private-public partnership with Dakota Pacific Real Estate at Kimball Junction there. Council members have been master planning the area around the Richens Building, Skull Candy, the Visitor Center buildings, and a subcommittee. So is the work behind closed doors now done?
So the subcommittee's purpose was to see if it was feasible for a public-private partnership on this property, both from a land planning perspective as well as from a financial feasibility perspective. And so that was the purview of that subcommittee, and that's what they brought to us yesterday, was a master plan of the area. Nothing is set in stone. It's just essentially this is what's feasible. This is what could go there that could provide some community benefits, that would help with pedestrian flow, that would allow for some additional parking and an enhanced transit center, etc. And so the subcommittee is now done with that work, which was their purview. And so we will be having weekly public meetings and just our general Wednesday council meetings discussing this project, and the actual negotiations will now ensue.
All right. And as you mentioned, what you looked at yesterday was a master plan, not a site plan. What's the difference?
So a master plan is more conceptual. A site plan would be, this is where this building is going to go specifically, and this is more what it's going to look like. Often with a site plan, you're also going to have renderings of what the buildings will actually look like. We're nowhere close to that right now. It's really determining, okay, here's what here's what is feasible, here's what could potentially go on this site, this is what it could look like. And again, our negotiations for what that will look like into the future are now really beginning. There's a whole, a third of the project, I think even a little bit more than a third of the project that we've yet to look at all, that in the past Dakota Pacific has wanted to put housing on. And according to their presentation briefly yesterday, that they have some sort of housing they want to put on that property still. We haven't seen that at this point, but we anticipate seeing it either next week or the week after, so that we as a council can react and that the public can react as well.
All right, can you describe a little bit what's in that master plan?
So currently in the master plan, it would be putting podium parking where the current Richens building is, the current transit center, as well as the lot immediately adjacent, which is owned by Dakota Pacific. There would be two layers of podium parking, somewhere between 1,000 and 1,200 spaces. And on top of that would be a mixed use development, mix of retail, office, and residential. Affordable housing in that parcel would be owned by the county. Immediately next to, well, I guess between that property and the visitor center would be an enhanced and enlarged transit center that would go there. Across the street is an area that would be more civic based, anticipated there, or at least proposed, next to the Skullcandy building, which the county purchased and will have some county services in. We would have an amphitheater for the public, potentially a new library that would go in that area, senior housing, potentially some additional affordable housing, and office medical is what's currently proposed in that area. Again, just a proposal, nothing's been approved by council, but that's essentially, this is the starting point from which negotiations would now take place.
Okay, and that parking, would it always be free?
Right now, there's been no conversations of paid parking in that area. I think the intention, at least at this point, is that it would be free. Would that change in 20 years? I don't know, Leslie. I won't be making that decision, but the anticipation of it is that it will be free.
All right. And the number of residences has always been a concern with this development. Do we have a number at this point?
We do not have a number at this point. I would say even the proposed affordable units on both the podium parking as well as the affordable units that were proposed yesterday and the senior housing proposed in the civic area, everything is negotiable right now. Nothing is set in stone. Again, this is just conceptual as far as what could go there. And the housing will be one of the key negotiating components that the council will be addressing in the subsequent meetings moving forward.
Okay, but that had to be discussed behind closed doors because that was kind of the crux of all of this, right? I mean, the developers wanted more, the community wanted less.
So that actually was not discussed behind closed doors. The purview of the subcommittee was really just to look at this public-private partnership to see if that was feasible from, again, both a land planning and financial perspective. The public-private partnership area has increased during that time period. Initially, I think we all anticipated really just the parcels where the Richens building, the transit center, and then immediately adjacent along the 224 corridor. That since has enhanced to include that whole section west of that initial parcel where the Skullcandy building is. So as far as how many units, that actually has not been discussed behind closed doors, and as we promise the public, will all take place out in the open so the public can participate and understand that and get all of that information.
All right, and what's the status of the gondola, and would it be used to link both sides of Kimball Junction?
So right now, the status of the gondola is that within the project, there is space anticipated that would be preserved for an eventual gondola. And so with that, it's really dual faceted. We're contemplating it as far as going up to the UOP and potentially to canyons. That's currently within the canyons master plan that they had anticipated some sort of gondola from the Kimball Junction. It would yet to be seen if that happens or not. That would be a veiled decision. I don't know where they stand on that. With in reference to connecting both sides of the county or both sides of Kimball Junction. We would also like to anticipate and preserve space to have a gondola that went from east to west. So from the podium and the plaza and that area of that mixed use development over to somewhere on the Smith side. Right now, we aren't certain where that might be, and so we can't necessarily anticipate that, but I know that that's something that we will be looking into. That would be a really beneficial component within the Kimball Junction Neighborhood Master Plan Committee. That was one of the really big focuses, was how do we connect east and west of Kimball Junction? And so that would be part of the purpose of the gondola and also a potential pedestrian bridge.
Okay, so if you had the gondola, you'd still need a pedestrian overpass?
Right now, we are looking at both to see, you know, the gondola is being anticipated. We still need to look at the feasibility as far as financially, where we might touch down on the east side of Kimball Junction. It would be working with multiple landowners, whereas with the pedestrian bridge, that's lower hanging fruit that we're working with UDOT that could happen more quickly.
All right. So has the council and Dakota Pacific decided who pays for what?
So there's been some anticipatory conversations surrounding what that might look like. Again, even in the presentation yesterday, where there was some potential ideas of who might pay for what, there was the addendum that, you know, all of that would be subject to the actual negotiations that will now be taking place.
All right. So what's the timeline from here? Could we see any decisions by the end of the year?
Potentially there could be decisions by the end of the year. I believe that's what we're working towards to determine, is there a deal to be had here or not?
All right.
As you know, Leslie, we've been working on this project for several years now at this point. So I think really coming to a conclusion of yes or no.
Let's move on to the Ear Ranch. The council also heard an update from staff. It sounds like the county is not planning to put housing on the property anymore. Is that the result of public input, what you heard?
Yeah, so we had multiple open houses, conversations with members of the public, and it became very apparent that housing on any portion of this property, that the public was highly opposed to that. Also looking at the areas in which we would be putting housing, contrary to some of where we've been trying to put some housing recently is next to services and grocery to decrease traffic and have some transit access. This parcel that was being proposed didn't have those amenities associated with it. And so I think as a council, both with public input as well as this not really being an ideal place for housing, we decided to no longer look at that.
The county is just over halfway funding the purchase, and it sounds like the Ear family would like to close on parts of the purchase. How come?
You know, I'm not privy to that information. I believe for personal reasons that the Ears would like to close more quickly on a portion of the property. I will say, as far as selling property, I mean, we entered into a 3 to 4 year option to purchase the property with the Yours. And so typically, you know, in an arm's length transaction, there's a much quicker close. There's more access to funds much more quickly. I really appreciate their willingness to allow the county to go through options so that we could fundraise with grants and other sources so that the county, we could stretch the bond money further. And there are portions of this property that we've received grants for. And so I think closing early on that property makes sense and can be mutually beneficial to both the Yours for whatever they would like those funds for, as well as for the county and having a decreased interest payment.
So you are comfortable using more money from the general obligation open space bond to close on the property than this year?
You know, we're still looking at that and still negotiating what that will look like. I think we anticipated there may be a need for some additional funds from the open space bond for this property. And so we're looking at all options still.
Yeah, you did hear from Lands and Natural Resources Director Jess Kirby that the extra bond money could be recuperated. How so?
So the North Meadows portion of the property is likely going to be under an agricultural conservation easement, and there is potential for an agricultural conservation easement buyer for that property so that it can be maintained. And so there would be potentially a recoup of some of the funds from that purchase.
Okay.
And that sale.
Sure. And then tell me, what's this land banking idea for some of the parcels there?
There's a few parcels that are not connected to the bulk of the property. That one, that there's anticipated a road extension either through or along the side of the parcel. And so we want to retain that parcel, not put an easement on that currently, just until we understand what that might look like. Then we would have options to potentially divide the parcel and put part of it under a conservation easement that does not have the road on it. And there was another parcel that could be appropriate for more planned and programmed recreation. And so that's something that we want to look into with the public and others to be able to see, is that desirable or is really the highest and best use that the community wants for this property, just to preserve it and leave it just open space versus some sort of programmed recreation.
All right. Moving on to the budget discussion, Chief Financial Officer Matt Leavitt updated the council on the expected budget shortfall. So is the emergency services sales tax not able to account for the entire shortfall at this point?
So my understanding is the emergency services sales tax would account for the entirety of what is needed to fund the emergency services within the county and maintain that level of service. The concern is that is a sales tax that is on the the voters will be able to vote on during the election, that will be on the ballot. We won't know the results of that until the election in November. If that does not pass, making sure we're just having the conversation that if that does not pass, what that looks like as a county. And so and I want to be careful, as we can't necessarily advocate for that tax at this point, but really trying to make sure that as a council we're being responsible and that we're not leaving the county in a deficit.
Right. So, I mean, do you just go ahead and play by the rules then and schedule a truth and taxation hearing for December just in case?
So the purpose of yesterday's meeting and how that the truth and taxation process works is that initially, and I believe before October 1st, the county manager or county executive has to present before the legislative body that there he or she has the intention of going through truth and taxation, that he is proposing that to the legislative body, this being the council, that he thinks we should. And so that's what happened yesterday. Ultimately, it's a council decision, and there will be a formal decision of yes or no, we're going through truth and taxation. I believe mid-October is about that timeline. So the second or third meeting of October, the council will make a formal decision of yes or no, we're going to pursue this process. Again, that's not yes or no, we are going to increase property taxes. It's simply us deciding, okay, we're going to continue this process. December would be the time when there was a thumbs up or thumbs down on yes or no to the increase of property tax.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention, Melina?
Just really wanted to just voice my appreciation to the members of the public that came and participated in our meeting yesterday, as well as the staff and their participation and their preparation. We had several pretty lengthy items yesterday and really appreciated everyone's participation with both of those items.
All right. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's Summit County Council Chair Melina Stevens. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, as we reported on Tuesday, the Park City Board of Education named the principal of Treasure Mountain Junior High School, Caleb Fine, as interim superintendent. The board also accepting the retirement of Superintendent Dr. Jill Gilday, which is effective January 31st of next year. Now in the studio, tell us more. I do have Caleb Fine and School Board Vice President Wendy Crossland. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
And Caleb, congratulations.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, Leslie.
Yeah. Any regrets so far?
I had a great day yesterday. I got to be in McPullen, Park City High School, seeing the students and just trying to be available and useful.
Okay. So I guess I was confused by this just based on all of the dates mm-hmm. that were kind of thrown on. So just give us some explanation. You, Caleb, are in charge. You hold all of the keys to all of the schools.
My badge certainly works at all of the buildings now, which is great. But I'm here to help. I'm here to lead and again, just provide guidance and help make the best decisions. Yes.
All right. So the way I understand it, though, Dr. Gilday is employed until October 31st?
Wendy? Yeah. Great question. So yes, Caleb has assumed all operations, day-to-day operations, and Dr. Gilday is graciously staying to help transition institutional knowledge and other information that Caleb will need to continue to manage and take on this interim position. And that she's agreed to do that through October 31st. And thereafter, she's accrued her leave time.
So was her resignation effective September 17th then? Is that how it worked?
No.
I just don't understand. Or
right.
Not her retirement.
Yeah, her retirement. So, no, she gave us formal notice, as I announced on Tuesday night, that she was intending to retire as of January 31st, and she has agreed to help with this interim transition. We thought it's best for the district, given the transitionary nature of this state we're in, that we put in a leader like Caleb to manage this transition and be the transitionary leader in the district right now. The details of the dates and the contract, a lot of that I'm not at liberty to talk about right now.
All right. So what does that look like, though, in that transition?
Yeah.
Does she work from
Great
home
question.
With you, or is she in office with you? Or?
Yeah, I'm fortunate. Dr. Gilday has already reached out, and she's offered her support. And I'm able to leverage that support as needed. So she has a lot of wisdom, and that's what I want to glean from, right? I don't have to have all the answers. I need to help make the best decisions. So you lean on a team, and I've got great principals. We have a great cabinet, and we have an incredible community. And then I've got Dr. Gilday to ask questions to whenever I need. So if I need her in person, I can have that. And if I need her via phone call, I can have that as well. It's a total win for me. I'm set up for success in that.
Okay. So Wendy, can you explain the difference for us that between retirement and resignation? It sounds like it may have something to do with the way that state law treats public servants.
Yeah, so we're not at all, we have nothing, the district has nothing to do with Dr. Gilday's retirement. I'm not going to speak to her retirement. Her retirement is Dr. Gilday's. So for us, all that we know right now, she is, her tenure is done here in Park City School District. As she stated, as of January 31st, we're super grateful for her 6 years of service. She's going to stay on and help guide this transition. And beyond that, there's not a lot I have privy information to or can talk about.
Okay, can you?
The districts, sorry.
And yeah. I think a lot of us, our eyebrows raised, as she officially, the retirement isn't official until the end of January, which she continues to receive unused vacation or accrued time. I mean, explain to us how somebody working only 6 years can have 3 months of paid vacation. It's like, sign me up.
Oh, yeah. Well, good questions. I'm not going to talk about, as you can imagine and appreciate, Leslie, we're not talking about any personnel contract or time. We wouldn't do that, as any employer wouldn't do that. That's confidential information. But she does have accrued time, as any other admin, any other employee would have in other circumstances. And that's all I can say about that.
Right.
I literally, legally, by law, I'm not going to talk about personnel.
Yeah,
and
I get
contracts.
It. But still, I mean, I guess there's lots of places where you work where you use it or lose it.
Uh-huh.
With the school district, it accrues year to year to year. Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's a benefit that actually all district employees have. We have PTO, and our 12-month employees also accrue vacation time. And the board's been so gracious over, this is something that's carried many boards before, to accrue PTO and vacation. I'm a benefit of it. It's a benefact to me as well, so I'm grateful for it.
Right, and that would include sick time that's not used?
Correct, yep.
Yeah, and you also have the opportunity to benefit sick time to somebody who actually may need it?
There is a sick bank policy that's ran in our district, which is huge, because our district is a family. There's a community, especially at the school level, and teachers want to support other teachers. So we have a sick bank policy, and teachers can donate a day, and staff can apply for that time if they're a part of the sick bank, and it's really blessed some families in need.
Yeah, I do just want to add, like, what this moment, it's undoubtedly been challenging and complicated, but I want to assure everybody, because there's definitely an interest in all of these details and specifics. That said, there is no one in this, no players, all of us have kept the district first. We have come up with a great solution, I believe, that keeps this district running smoothly. We're so excited that Caleb has been willing to step up. We unanimously asked for him to do this, and we're all in a really good position to carry and move forward this district at a time that's transitioning and is challenging, and there's a lot of stuff going on. And we've the way we've been able to structure this, we don't have to hire anybody new. We have great, and Caleb can speak to this, who's going to be taking over treasurer, so Caleb can step into this role. And so it's really been, I believe, the best decision for the district on a lot of different levels. And we're all interested in that, everybody in this.
So let's talk about that then. What is the process then for replacing Dr. Gilday? We have somebody temporarily.
Yeah, and you undoubtedly will want to bring in the current board members who are going to be carrying on the board after January. They will take on the formal process of looking for the next superintendent. And I would encourage you to just talk to them as they begin that process.
Okay, because there's a certain time of year that actually things like that happen, and it's not right now.
Right. I mean, the way they are going to start exploring that formal process is obviously on the radar. And as that moves forward, I'm sure they'll be very keen to keep the community aware of what's going on.
Yeah,
that process.
And on Tuesday, the school board also started the process for closing Treasure Mountain Junior High School, which that leaves you without a school, Caleb. Do you have any interest in applying for a full-time superintendent, or are you happy being a school administrator?
I'm happy working in this district. The truth is, Leslie, I love this community. I have a deep passion for it. Most of all of my success personally, the fact that I'm able to raise a family here is because of this community. I'm a graduate of Park City High School. I've mowed a lot of people's lawns with Fine Lawn and Landscape. A little awkward because I was probably a shirtless 16-year-old boy at the time. And now in this role, that's a bit different. But, you know, this community has blessed me so much. So I want to be here, and I want to be useful.
All right. Being interim, though, doesn't prevent you from applying for the job if you should so choose.
Absolutely not. But we're focused on this interim moment and his steady, thoughtful, knowing relationship with both the district and the community is something we're really excited about.
All right. What about the district house in Jeremy Ranch? When does it get vacated?
Dr. Gilday will obviously be moving out of that house. And within the contractual time that is allotted to her. And we're excited, actually, that is an investment that this district made years ago as something that could potentially be used to help attract good candidates. We know the housing prices here are really, really high, and it's nice that we can have this as part of a potential package for somebody that the next board can look for.
Yeah, so basically, the contractual time is January 31st.
I'm not sure.
Anytime before then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if not used by a superintendent, I mean, what else would you do with it?
That's a good question. I think we'd have to explore that. I imagine that it is going to be something that will be heavily part of any offer or package as we do a good search. And if not, we'll definitely use that investment to the benefit of the district and to help the district move things along. I mean, we have a lot of demands and priorities budget-wise, as you know, and having that as something and an option that we can have in the future, whether it be for the superintendent or for something else, is a good problem to have.
Yeah, it's likely doubled in value since you've had it.
Probably.
All right, and now let's get to this. Did the school board get the required 30-day notice that Dr. Gilday was looking for another job?
Yeah,
Has that been determined?
I'm not going to talk about that. I'm not going to talk about that.
All right.
Right now. Thank you.
So we don't know, but we do know that the board did go ahead and approve the contract while she was out looking for another job, even though you may not have known.
Approve what contract?
Her contract for another 2 years.
We approved that last month. Yep.
All right. But you wouldn't have done that if you had known that she was looking for another job, or would you have?
I that's just so speculative. Leslie, that is just not something we're going to engage in today. There's too many other things that we want to move that doesn't it's not helpful right now for the district to move along. I appreciate the interest in that kind of information and the and those questions.
Yeah, your constituents, yeah. Right? Yeah, I'm just the messenger here.
Yeah.
Let's talk then about the process going forward with Treasure Mountain. So the decision was made that we're going to decommission it. Are we tearing it down as well?
That has not been decided. The next steps for Treasure are, we did do the survey, and that survey came back that the biggest interest in use of that land was for potential athletic facilities. That has not been determined. We're in that process of now looking at what does that look like. This is obviously a much longer, given the new law, process. Just to close it, we had to notify this month and make the vote that we did on Tuesday. Then we have the process, the officially closing it at the end of the year, realigning to the high school, the ninth grade, eighth to the Ecker. As we do that process, we will continue to reach out and talk to the community about what makes the most sense in this. And we have to look at finance. We have to look at our budget. We have to look at our priorities. So we're not sure yet what exactly will happen there. It's a nice opportunity to have that land and that space. It also, as we all know, has challenges.
Mm-hmm. It's an old building.
Yeah.
Right. Because there was some talk, maybe it could be a community center or something like that.
I think that survey that went out, that with different, and a lot of people, and I don't have the numbers, and I can get back to you with that, did talk about different options for that property, and including housing, athletics, community center. And I believe what came out the most interest was an athletic facility that could serve the Kearns campus in this district.
All right. And that was supposed to be discussed on Tuesday, but taken off. So it'll come back for a future discussion.
Yeah. Yeah. We will definitely continue to discuss that. It's an important priority. And there's obvious and frustration that we haven't been able to move along a little faster in that process. And we'll get back to that.
All right. All right, and then for Caleb, what's at the top of your to-do list?
I think, great question. top of my to-do list is to get in the schools, spend time in each building, being available to principals. We know that schools are at the heart of this community, they're at the heart of this district, so that's where the action is, and I want to support that. And as we identify opportunities for improvement, which there are, we're going to continue to attack those in the interim period. And we want the community to heal. We really do. We want people to have confidence in this district collectively across the board, because our parents are giving us these priceless children of infinite worth, of immeasurable value. So we want to be available to them. We want to hear from them, and we want to move forward. I can't wait to transition this district well. I'm so grateful for Dr. Jill's support in that process. One thing she told to me is, hopefully I'm going to be there for you, and then you can be there for the next person. And that's what this community is. Let's be there for the next person. So that's what we're going to do.
Yeah. So, Wendy, can you talk just a little bit about, did you ask staff if anybody was interested and people raised their hand, or did you reach out to individuals and say, is this something you would consider?
Yeah, no. The five of us unanimously agreed that Caleb would be the right person in this transition for this moment right now, for this district. He's an outwardly facing leader. We believe that his knowledge and of the school already, and the staff and the connections he has and the relationships he has, was a really important. It's an important moment for that skill and that type of leadership. And we're really, really grateful that he was willing to do this.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to mention?
Honored for the board's support, and look forward to seeing everyone out and about in the community. It's a great place to live. Beautiful season right now. The leaves are out, so we're going to enjoy that.
Okay. Caleb Frey, Wendy Crossland, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thanks for having us, Leslie.
Joining me now in the studio, the Park City Community Foundation yesterday awarded a number of local nonprofit organizations, including KPCW, with annual grants at its grant celebration. And in the studio with me, I have the CEO of the Park City Community Foundation, Joel Zero, along with Grants and Impacts Manager, Minda Boland. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
Joel, maybe just start with the fact that nearly $11 million has been awarded since these grants first started. Where does this money come from?
The money primarily comes from an incredibly generous community providing donations to local nonprofits, the Community Foundation.
Okay. So yesterday we handed out how much money to how many organizations?
So yesterday was a celebration of all the grants we've made over the course of a year. So all of the people at the celebration had already been awarded grants. And the total amount, like you said, we've gotten into the community is about $11 million.
Okay. And then for just the year was over $3 million just for the year alone?
For the year alone, we break it down in different ways. So in total of total grants, it's about $8 million and then about $2 million worth of services to the community. Like the Community Foundation runs an equity cohort. We do a ton of nonprofit education. We have a climate fund that's involved in zero waste, and we do some incentive programs there. So the total dollar out to the community is that $11 million.
Okay, over the years. And Minda, how is it, how does the grant process work? You just accept applications and anybody can apply?
Yeah, we have a couple of grant processes that are open by application, and nonprofits are selected to receive grants by our steering committees, and they look really closely at community needs. They conduct site visits with nonprofits and look at organizations' financials to understand, to really understand those organizations and make really smart grants with great impact.
Okay. And so it's the steering committee who decides who gets what?
Yes. Our steering committees help guide those granting decisions. And they're made up of about 8 to 10 community members. We have usually at least one member of our board of directors who sits on those committees. And we believe that the outcomes are better when we include and listen to people who will be directly impacted by those grants. So we have a great group of community members as part of those steering committees who help us make decisions.
Okay, so how many different funds do you have? I mean, you have the community fund, which was, again, that was something that KPCW would receive, right?
That's right. We have the community fund, we've got early child care, we've got climate, and then we also have our donor advised funds. So we have about 68 of those under management, and we advise donors on where they can allocate their dollars. Want to go back, part of that $11 million is Live PC, Give PC. So the money doesn't come directly to the Community Foundation, but we're setting up the platform to enable donors to access nonprofits that they care about. So that was $4.8 million last year.
Okay. All right. So that didn't come in your pocket, but that was what you helped
facilitate
across the community. Got
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
Okay. And then in terms of the organizations that did get those community fund grants, how much do they get?
So community fund grants range from $2,500 to $15,000. And we do have a handful of multi-year community fund grantees. So they receive a three-year grant. And we granted to 55 organizations this year, a total of $455,000. And a huge thank you to Deer Valley Resort, who pitched in 100 of that 455.
Oh, nice. Okay. And so that fund kind of lives in investments, and then you pull, is that how it works? Explain that.
Yeah, that's right. All of our funds live in investments, and we've got short-term, medium-term, long-term investments. We've got an incredible investment and finance committee, and every year we budget how much we can allocate to our grant making. And what Minda was saying about our steering committees really is unique and very important. We don't have program officers making unilateral decisions about where funds go. Community members do that. We organize it so we can get the best decision made around where these funds should be allocated.
Okay, I think you also do site visits?
We do. We try to make the granting process as easy as possible to our grantees and nonprofits. We don't want them spending time creating applications and writing reports. At the same time, we need to do our due diligence and make sure the money is used well and getting the impact that our donors and nonprofits want to make. So site visits are a great way to get to know what the work on the ground without being too onerous to our nonprofits.
All right. I try to stay out of the money scene. So I just, my understanding is that KPCW did get something. Do you know what it's for? Or, I mean, what?
KPCW did receive a community fund grant. They're a longtime community fund grantee. And I don't know the number off the top of my head, but just a wonderful partner.
Okay, well, we appreciate the support, so thank you. Also want to note that you handed out the annual Tricia J. Worthington Community Service Award, and for those who may not know Tricia, she was actually the original, well, your position, the CEO, original CEO.
Yeah, she's the founding CEO. She really started building this organization that's so impactful in the community.
Yeah, so who did that award go to?
Yes, so each year we recognize someone who's been contributing their time and their talent to charitable and community endeavors in the spirit of Tricia Worthington. And we were so pleased to award this to Patty Garcia this year. And she has been giving back through her job in the nonprofit sector for over 15 years. She's a fabulous connector for families who are seeking access to resources, as well as has just been a tireless advocate for our Latinx community members. So congratulations to Patty. She's just so deserving.
Okay. And then those nominations, I guess we should mention that she actually works for the People's Health Clinic.
She does.
Yeah.
Yes. And she serves on the board of PC TOTS as well.
Okay. And Mountain Lands Community Housing Trust.
Okay.
So she's
involved.
Super involved.
Yes, she is. And then how is that process work?
Yeah, so that is an open nomination to the community. So each August we open nominations for that award, and then the Community Fund Steering Committee is the one who reviews nominations and makes that decision as well.
All right, so in addition to the bragging rights, I mean, does she receive anything else?
Yes, she receives $1,000 to be granted to the nonprofit of her choice.
Okay, did she explain where that's going?
We don't know her decision yet.
Okay.
But yeah, it'll go out in the next few weeks here.
Okay. Also, as you kind of mentioned, that some of this money that you raise is through those community passes. And are those, when do those go on sale?
Community passes is a great program. We go out, we get a whole bunch of benefits, including lift tickets, restaurant vouchers. They're available now. It's $15,000, but that donation goes directly to the Community Foundation and enables us to do community fund grants and other programs that we run. So if you're interested in a Community Pass Club membership, you should reach out to us or me, Joel, at parkcitycf.org. One of the best things about them is all of the benefits are transferable. So if you have guests, you can provide them with lift tickets. You don't have to make reservations. It's just ready for you.
Okay. Is it done just whenever they choose to purchase it, or is it done on a calendar year? Or?
It's whenever they choose to purchase it. We have both winter benefits and summer benefits, so you can get in at any time. It's a really important program and helps the Community Foundation run.
Okay. Anything else you two want to mention?
Two things. First, zero food waste. You've got a chance to sign up for curbside food recycling. Just go onto our website, parkcitycf.org, sign up. It's a great program. We've got incentives in place, so the first month is free. And Live PC, Give PC is coming up, so put on your orange.
Okay. When is that date? I think you pushed it back a week.
November 15th.
After the election.
Yeah, we were contending with election, so
yeah,
they won.
Okay, and then are you getting the numbers on that food waste program that you had hoped?
Yeah, there's been a lot of signups. I think we're at about 265. We're still collecting folks, and it's really fun. It's really easy to do. You see your trash go down, and people should get involved, get their neighbors involved too.
Okay, Joel, Minda, thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, once prominent Park City attorney Joe Rona, who was convicted of sexually assaulting his daughter, has been released early for good behavior. KPCW's Connor Thomas has more on that.
Court records indicate Joe Rona was released from the Summit County Jail September 5th. He was let out for good behavior after spending less than 8 months behind bars. In January, a judge sentenced him to a year in jail after he pleaded guilty to reduced charges of forcible sexual abuse and incest. He was initially charged with raping his adult biological daughter in 2022. The controversial plea deal included eligibility for good time, where inmates' sentences are reduced for good behavior. Rona was able to leave jail 4 months early. He must still serve 40 months of supervised probation. The terms of the plea also prohibit him from contacting his daughter for the rest of his life. According to prosecutors and the survivor's attorney, Michael Langford, she supported the plea agreement. If Rona violates the terms of his probation, he may see prison time. KPCW could not reach Rona for comment Wednesday. Rona was also required to register as a sex offender. The Utah Sex Offenders Registry lists his permanent address as Park Meadows. It shows Rona's other known addresses in Moab and Santan Valley, Arizona.
That's Connor Thomas reporting. You're listening to KPCW Park City.